Hi, Jordan. Happy April 19th, as we all know the date is. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Well, happy that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a somber day, maybe, because we don't know what's going to happen to the human race.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the battle of the planet, battle for the planet of the apes.
This is
stupid.
The Macabre
that
Podcast
make sense.
Universe. I'm Jordan. That's Micah. We're here to prove people wrong when they say
sequels are never better than the originals.
And apparently, it's ape roll.
Oh, very good. Now,
isn't that why you said that?
No, I was just being stupid.
Oh, I thought you meant it like pun.
Yeah.
Like pun.
we're proving correct the one person on YouTube who said after 20 seconds. This is the dumbest podcast in the world or something like that on Lethal Weapon 3. So for you,
yeah, that
you're
is
right.
Really what did it. I think we're going to pack it in here.
Yeah, that one guy. I did realize after just reading like two bad comments, I was like, I can't ever look at the comments again. They weren't even that mean. And I was like, I can never do this again. Like, it hurts too much.
Meanwhile, you probably have like five people texting you about movies.
Yeah.
Because they love talking to you about movies.
Yeah, yeah. I know my place. But you know, bad criticism, it sucks. Yeah. And yet, here we are, criticizing.
Whether or not you want it, it's here, out in the ether.
Yeah.
Us talking about Battle for the Planet of the Apes, the fifth
installment
in the Planet of the Apes franchise.
Uh-huh.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So, this is like the conclusion of the series. For the time being, obviously there are more movies for us to cover, but this is like the original
Thankfully,
ending of
many,
the series.
Many more.
Yeah, it's true. We just passed the halfway point.
We get a fun. So we do these five movies, and then the next one will be a fun. Like, I don't know.
Fun
don't
is really a very strong word.
What I mean
word.
By fun is you can just turn your brain off, not really have to think too critically. Although we will be very critical.
Yeah.
And then it's just a palate cleanser. For then the other stuff we'll get to watch is what I'm saying.
Such a positive approach.
I'm trying to go into it positively.
Yeah. Well, so here's the deal. Battle for the Planet of the Apes is a movie that came out on June 13th in 1973.
And is that when you watched it?
I did. I went back in time in a little starship, and I was on this beach, and I showed up, and everything was different. And I went to the movie theater, and they were showing Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Far out.
Yeah, totally, bro. So that's when the movie came out. It's got a $1.8 million budget.
Wow. Wow.
Pretty low.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I think the last movie had the lowest.
Did they shoot this in someone's backyard?
They did it on the lots, you know. And it made $8.8 million.
Great.
So it still did well, but I think these last two were kind of seen as, you know, like not as good
like,
as they
were hoping. Like, yeah, it made back a lot of money, but it's like, can't we make more money?
Yeah, I mean, the first movie made like, you know, I think it either made $17 or $27 million. Mm-hmm. So we're much lower than that. Mm-hmm. I think it is like, it's just for the fans now, you know?
Yeah.
But this one is also like the last movie directed by J. Lee Thomas, Thompson, excuse me. But this time the screenplay is different. So the story is by Paul Den, again, who's been working on the story since Beneath. But the screenplay is by John William and Joyce Hooper Corrington, who are husband and wife.
Okay.
Now they wrote a little movie called The Omega Man, and they also wrote Boxcar Bertha.
Oh, okay.
So they wrote some...
Boxcar Bertha is...
That's that Martin Scorsese movie.
Okay, yeah. I couldn't remember if that it was him or Spielberg.
Yeah, early. Yeah, you're probably thinking of Sugarland Express for Spielberg. Yeah,
it's Boxcar Bertha.
That was the one where they're on the train.
They're like outlaws, or they're like drifters.
Yeah, he gets crucified at the end.
Whoa! Yeah.
Yeah, very good movie.
Yeah.
As most Scorsese movies are. Yeah. So they did the screenplay, and that is because Paul was not able to finish the screenplay because he had some health problems.
Mm.
And so they were hired. Joyce later admitted they'd never seen a Planet of the Apes movie.
That's helpful.
Right.
And it's pretty important to know what's going on.
I know, it's pretty in-depth. But here's what's weird. Den was able to come in at the end and do a final polish. And then he went to the Writers Guild and contested that he should get a screenplay nomination or a screenplay credit as well.
And he did.
And he did not. Oh. He only got story by.
Oh, because I do remember seeing his name.
But according to him, he rewrote 90% of the dialogue and changed the ending from what they had.
Okay.
And he did change the ending, which we'll get into. They had a different ending.
Okay.
Cinematography is by Richard H. Klein, who did Soylent Green, nominated for the movie Camelot and Hang 'Em High. And then the music, returning from the second Planet of the Apes movie, we have Leonard Rosenman. Now, there was an original ending to this movie. I don't think this was like a shot ending. This was just the original script ending.
Okay.
And it showed an ape and a human child on a playground fighting.
Interesting.
So I think it like jumped into the future and was showing this is going to continue. Well, it seemed like maybe there's not going to coexist, you know?
Oh, okay.
And then Joyce, the script writer, she said that the tear in the Caesar statue, which was what Paul Den wrote, was, quote, stupid. It turned our stomachs when we saw it.
Okay.
says someone who has never seen a Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah.
J. Lee Thompson.
It's stupid. There's like these monkeys walking around talking.
J. Lee Thompson was unhappy with the script and wanted a bigger budget for the battle.
Yeah.
He just felt like they didn't.
That would have been nice. I will say. It was, I actually think, pretty. There were a lot of explosions.
Yeah.
But I think it could have been grander. But also, I don't know if that's actually what the movie should have been. And we can talk about it more.
Okay. Yeah, save that, because I think we can do quite a bit. There's also this scene that they cut, I think. There was a scene towards the end of the film shows the beginning of the House of Mendez cult, as the humans in the city are about to fire off the doomsday bomb, but decide not to, as it would destroy the world. And beneath, one can see many signs of Mendez in the Forbidden Zone. A hymnal on the pipe organ reads, Mendez 2, busts of past leaders of the mutant society, such as Mendez 14, and the mutant leader in beneath is also named Mendez. It is clear that Governor Mendez is a different leader than his predecessors.
Just saying the word Mendez, and that's actually all I'm getting from this.
Brecken Culp, since he is more sympathetic to the apes as long as they do not invade their territory.
His right-hand guy, the guy that was like the voice of reason?
No, I think the governor guy, the new governor, Mendez.
Okay, what about him?
There was just a cut scene that was kind of setting up that the cult of Mendez would start. I didn't realize it was called the cult of Mendez.
I did not take him as to be that kind of character.
Yeah.
What? Okay. I also only heard one word repeated over and over again in that quote.
It shows the beginning of the house of the cult, as the humans in the city are about to fire off the doomsday bomb, but decide not to in this movie.
Yeah.
That was a cut scene.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay.
That's what I have on notes.
Not much.
I mean, it's kind of, I kind of glanced at like the reception of this movie too. And the critics were like, kind of like, whew, a final gasp for a dying franchise, which
I don't think
is totally fair, but
you don't think it's fair?
We'll get into it. Let's talk about them actors.
But I do want to make it clear. Oh, I'm trying to look this up. I did like this movie. I don't think we talked about that.
Oh yeah. Let me. Well, while you're looking it up, I'll say I liked this movie as well.
Wow. Okay.
Go ahead.
So Aldo, General Aldo, is played by Claude Akins. He sounded like Dave Bautista. It was wild.
Very wild.
He is also in Inherit the Wind, Rio Bravo, The Kane Mutiny, and lots more. We did talk about Severn Darden, Culp, or Mendez, apparently.
Oh, wait a second. It mentions
that Paul. It is Paul Williams. It's the Paul Williams, Micah.
Really?
Yes.
Who is he?
Virgil.
He was.
Wasn't there an introducing?
Yeah.
Was he the son?
Whoa.
Hold on.
The son's name was Cornelius.
Oh, right.
Wait, who is Virgil again?
Okay, let me look it up. He might have been the orangutan.
Oh yeah, the one that they're hanging out with, that goes with the mission with them. That's Virgil.
Hold on.
You're talking about Paul Williams.
Yeah, as a genius orangutan character. And
I remember touch.
Yep.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's cool. How old is this guy? I was born in 1940.
Wow. older than dirt. Okay, I feel like I really messed up on the House of Mendez thing. So as you look that up, I'm going to do a little research.
Austin
okay?
Stoker plays McDonald, who they make clear in this movie. So McDonald, that character, I feel like they shouldn't have named him the same name, even though I know it's a last name. Because they start saying McDonald in this movie, and it's like, okay, so they just recasted this character from, what was the last movie?
Conquest.
Conquest.
Uh-huh.
And they make it pretty clear, but then they say this is McDonald's brother, McDonald.
Yeah.
I just think give him a different name.
Yeah. Maybe call him by their first name.
But this is Austin Stoker. He's also on, oh, that's what I think I recognize him from, Assault on Precinct 13.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember him?
Oh, that's okay. He's like the lead of that.
I think
right?
so. Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
He's in Sheba Baby. Airport 1975.
Okay. Classic.
Give Till It Hurts.
Uh-huh.
Three from Hell. I want to know what this is about because it's kind of a cool poster. After barely surviving prison, the demented Firefly clan go on the... Okay. No, that's not that. Okay. So yeah, that's Austin Stoker. Noah Keane plays teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He is also in The $6 Million Man. Gable and Lombard, Arrest and Trial. Apparently he's on The Sopranos. I don't remember an auto. Do you?
No.
Okay.
And which character is this? I'm trying
the teacher.
The teacher. Oh, okay.
Then the lawgiver is John Huston. You remember Otto?
Is he the guy that dates... No, he's not. But I see him. I like see him. No. I'm sorry. Wow. I'm really not pulling my end of the bargain here on good podcasting.
John Huston plays the lawgiver who is like narrating, which was interesting.
This was cool. And we're going to get into it.
So he's in Chinatown.
Uh-huh.
Shut up, Micah. It's Chinatown. the Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Oh, what a great movie.
I've never seen it.
Did we tell the story of the Chinatown thing?
Oh, I don't know, but I had never seen Chinatown and I could not remember what the famous line was.
So we put it in.
I just throughout the movie, I would be like, oh, it's this. And then my favorite one, it really tickled Micah's funny bone. I said, shut up, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah. She just kept on saying things and, you know, stop it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Here we go. It's Chinatown. I mean, she didn't use those last two, but she did actually guess. Did. Shut up. It's Chinatown.
I finally remember probably 3/4 of the way through.
No, you remember like the last scene. You're like, oh, forget it, Jake.
I did forget it. I did remember that. Okay. That's John Huston. I don't know if I said a single movie he was in. Oh, I did. Chinatown.
And Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
Lou Ayres plays Mandemus. Is that the orangutan that was in the armory?
I think it was.
He's in Holiday, All Quiet on the Western Front, the 1930 movie.
Okay.
Johnny Belinda and more. And then I'm forgetting a character.
Uh-huh. What, the little kid?
Mendez.
Or? Oh, okay. So which character
is... Okay, so Mendez is not the governor.
Okay,
that's
who is he?
That's why this
okay.
makes sense. It's his right-hand man that kept being the voice of reason. That kept being
that's
like...
Mendez.
Stop,
okay.
Like, what, you know, he was basically like... Don't be a bad guy, is what he was telling the bad guy.
Okay.
Okay, so that's... Now everything that you told me makes sense.
Yeah, because he survives, too, I believe.
Okay.
At the end of the movie.
So this guy, Paul Stevens, is also in Patton, The Mask, but not the Jim Carrey one.
What's the other one?
The 19... The what? One about... I thought this was this other... You know that one movie, The Mask, isn't like Cher in it or something?
I don't even have a clue what you're talking about. The Mask?
Okay, I'm going to look up that movie next. But this movie... Whoa, wait a second. The Mask, the Jim Carrey The Mask is a remake.
Of this movie?
Did you know that?
I had no idea.
A young archaeologist thinks he is cursed by an Aztec mask that makes him have strange nightmares. Okay, no, this isn't a remake. But he puts on a mask and this weird stuff happens to him.
Okay, but he doesn't turn into a cartoon in this one. And go awooga wooga.
No. Before committing suicide, he sends the mask to his psychiatrist, who soon plunges into the mask's nightmarish world. Can we watch this movie?
Sure.
Because this sounds interesting.
So what?
So the mask I'm talking about.
The mask was Cher? Yeah, they can't have movies have the same title. This many movies have the same title that are connected. Mask. It's not fair because it gets confusing.
Yeah, it's just called Mask. A teenager with a massive facial skull deformity and biker gang mother attempt to live as normal a life as possible under the circumstances and share stars.
What are the just scores Sam on Elliott. That? What's the scores?
73. I've heard people talk about this. A lot of people like this movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
I almost feel like, though, it's... Yeah, I feel like it's probably inspirational. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So can we get into the lore of the House of Mendez now? I am on Planet of the Apes wiki right now.
Okay,
so we'll see how far...
the word Mendez another effing time.
So the Corrington spouses, they wrote a new outline in 1972, loosely inspired by that of Den, which relegated Mendez to a much more subordinate role. Here, Mendez was an electronics expert and Governor Breck's communications officer. The last-minute survival of Breck at the conclusion of the preceding film in the series Conquest of the Planet of the Apes made him a much more obvious and familiar choice to lead the human resistance to Caesar. That's interesting. Did not know that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Thus, Mendez was included as only a minor character purely to tie in with his descendant from beneath. As it turned out, the actor who played Breck did not want to reprise the role.
Oh.
Okay, wow, I'm glad we're here. We're learning more. Instead, in the Corrington's revised script from December 1972, I did not realize that the wiki had this much breakdown on the scripts. Otherwise, I would have been researching on the Planet of the Apes wiki, and I will do that for the next movies, folks. But yeah, so Breck's place was taken by one of his assistants from Conquest, Kolo, who is in this movie. Okay. This final version described Mendez as Kolo's first lieutenant, who will one day be the first in the mutant dynasty that ends with Mendez 26 in Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
That makes sense because that character was basically like, let's just stay down here where we know we're safe.
These alterations robbed Den of his chance to bring the Mendez dynasty full circle in the way he had envisioned all along. Ultimately, even the character written by the Corringtons was edited out of the theatrical release so that the fate of the planet could be left to the interpretation of the audience members as to whether the race of mutants and the destruction of Earth shown in Beneath were inevitable. The scenes with Mendez have since been restored to some DVD releases of Battle, with the result that the Corrington Mendez is now generally considered the first of the Mendez dynasty.
Wow. Me likey.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that happened?
Huh?
So that happened, right?
What?
So Mendez was in the version we saw, right?
Yes, that was his right-hand bro.
Yeah, no, I'm just confirming.
Do not pursue them.
Okay, so...
For 2 week.
Yeah, so now I'm seeing that, like, the cutscene is him being like, no, don't do the bomb, and it sounds like the other guy was probably like, do the bomb, and he's saying don't do it, and so there's some cut stuff involving that. Okay, very cool. We got it. We got it locked in. Do we want to keep going or record the rest tomorrow?
What do you think?
let's just keep going.
Okay.
I'm having a good time talking about... Battle of the Planet of the Apes. I also see this, Death of the Planet of the Apes, which is a book that came out in 2018, and I kind of feel like I want to read everything.
Is it about the
history
of the franchise?
No, it's just a novel.
Oh, okay.
Death of the Planet of the Apes.
Written by who?
This is by it's published by Titan Books, of course, and it's written by Andrew E. C. Gaska.
I'll read it.
Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes 2. Okay, hang on. Let me find out how many Planet of the Apes books there are. And please let
them
be on.
It's funny that you would read these tie-ins and never read a Star Wars one.
I did when I was a kid, but this is more interesting to me, I think. List of books. Let's see what we got here. There's comics, which I already have on Marvel ready to go.
You do?
But I wanted to wait till we caught up on the movies just in case.
Okay.
I don't have all of them, but let's see. Oh, no. List of films. We already got that. Where are the list of the books? Hang on. We're not going to edit this. Where are they?
How does this movie start? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. I got it.
Trying to help you.
You know what? It it's not popping up very easily.
I think
so.
This is a do it on your own time situation. People are busy.
Yeah, I
namely me.
I like Planet of the Apes, and it's cool. Yeah,
we'll find it, buy it, and I'll read it too.
Well, hopefully it's on Libby, and then I can just listen to it. And hopefully there's a bunch of monkey sounds. Okay, so the movie starts in 2670 AD. And we see... We have this narrator.
Kind of talking about the events of... talking about the events of the last movie, and they show... recap.
Totally. They totally recap.
Yeah.
And what was surprising to me is it's recapping the movie... And we're seeing, like, he's talking about Caesar, and we're seeing this horse coming over the horizon, and I'm like, oh, is this going to be kind of a Western riff, you know? Like, we got a monkey on a horse, which we've had in the others, but, like, this seemed kind of, you know, a little more austere. And then I see this, I forget Beneath the Planet of the Apes and Planet of the Apes 1, because there's a character credited as the Lawgiver. And I was thinking, like, oh, there's going to be, like, a sheriff or something. Like,
yeah,
the
lawgiver.
Yeah,
that's what I was expecting, too.
But no. This is the lawgiver that they...
worship? Well, not worship, but he's, like, their prophet?
Yeah, I guess he's, like, Moses.
Sure.
And he is teaching... we'll find out later. He's, like, teaching a group of, like, children apes.
And humans.
Well, yeah.
Because we're 26, yeah. Whatever, is still not when Charlton Heston shows up.
Yeah. Well,
so, because basically, the like humans aren't slaves.
Okay, so
because they were being taught together.
So here's what I would say. I guess we just had to jump to the end of the movie to talk about this. The whole movie, the characters are talking about if the future is ever changeable, if it's even possible to change the future.
Yeah.
And then we get to the end, and to me, the fact that they're teaching children and apes means that this is a different future.
Oh.
And we are not headed towards the one of destruction. We're headed towards one of harmony.
Okay.
So that's what I took from the ending of the movie.
It's very hopeful of you. It's very hopeful of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is not very hopeful.
Is that not what you took from it?
I just took it as... I do like that. That does make sense. But because it's not... 3,000 whatever it was.
Yeah.
When the first movie takes place, I just assume this is just a stopping, like a moment in history.
See, I would probably agree with you if not for the fact that the characters talk so much about the future changing and if it's possible.
True.
Seems like
okay.
That's what they're, you know, pontificating about.
Okay.
So yeah. Anyway, we could talk more about that when we
recaps the last movie. That catches us up to this movie. We see gorillas, chimps, orangutans have their own society. They're building their own society. Humans are with them. Eventually you see it seems that the humans aren't working with them. It's more that they're working for them. So roles are reversed. And especially when we meet the McDonald character, I do like that the McDonald character is still, well, not still, it's a different person. Different character, but like his brother is still kind of criticizing what's happening.
Is
like, we are slaves, you know that, right? And Caesar's like, I don't view it that way. But McDonald's like, but we are.
Yeah.
Like I do not have freedom. And they do kind of like philosophize about what is freedom.
Uh-huh.
Like that a lot.
And
we also see apes in school. The humans are teaching them how to read. By the way, it's like 20 years since the last movie. I think is what they said.
I didn't catch
12 to 20 years.
Okay.
Apes learned how to talk very quickly.
Yes.
So let's just say that.
Yeah.
But humans are teaching them how to read and write.
Yeah.
And then that's when we pretty much get introduced to Aldo, General Aldo.
Yep.
Who doesn't read, doesn't write, doesn't want to learn, you know, doesn't want to be taught by a human.
Uh-huh.
And thinks that he's superior just by who he is. Because of what he is.
Well, and we're seeing that the gorillas are prone to battle.
Yes.
You know.
So
war.
He's very combative.
Yeah.
And argumentative.
Yeah.
And the teacher tells him no.
Right.
And everyone's
now,
like.
But before you pause there, I just want to.
I'm kind of jumping around a little bit.
No, you're not jumping around. You're doing a great job and going right through. But I want to ask you. as this movie progresses, we'll talk about the battle in specific later, but just the way like their settlement is set up, did you feel like when you were watching it, you're going, oh, this is pretty low budget? Or did it feel natural? What, like, what did you think of that?
I didn't feel like it was low budget. And I think that because they can get away with, they're living in a forest in tree houses.
Yeah.
It's going to look that way no matter if they have, the only thing that I think a bigger budget could give them is more people.
Yeah.
And more structures.
Yeah.
But it looked like they were just surviving in the wilderness. That's kind of the beauty of, okay, they don't have a lot of money to make this movie. Doesn't matter. It still looked good to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I think kind of in hindsight, like thinking about the movie and thinking about the budget and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I guess it is a pretty low budget movie.
Yeah.
That really shines, the low budget shines in the battle for me. Again, we'll talk about it when we get there. But I do sort of wonder like what this movie would be like if it had a few million more thrown at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there'd just be a little more like interesting set pieces, or maybe some of the like locations where key events happen would be a little.
Location would maybe be a little bit more important.
Yeah.
Would look a little bit better.
Like in terms of when the sun is in the tree, it's like that's a fine looking spot, but it's like maybe it would look better or happen a little more dramatically or something, you know, if it wasn't so. Just like, oh, there's trees back here. We can shoot here for free, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Or for little money, you know?
What is the studio?
This is Fox.
Fox. Okay. Yeah.
The now defunct Fox, which is now just 20th Century Studios.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yeah.
Makes you think.
Yeah.
But the teacher says no. And then
Yes. The
apes go, well, they go ape. And they're ripping apart the classroom. Virgil happens to be walking by when it happens, runs up to the teacher, and he's like, you said the one word that has been stricken and forbidden to be uttered by anyone, because that is what you humans told apes for years and years and years was no.
Yeah, okay.
Love that. Love this
rule. Yeah, that's great, yeah.
So, therefore, the teacher's life is in danger. And he runs away. And so the Virgil's like, get away now if you want to live. So the teacher runs away. Gorillas chase after him.
Uh-huh.
Teacher makes it to...
Teacher
make it to Caesar. And Virgil's there, explains what happens. Caesar's like, we are not to harm this person. Virgil kind of covers for him. Like he it was a heat of the moment thing.
Uh-huh.
It'll never happen again.
Yeah.
And then Caesar tells the gorillas to go back to the classroom and put it back together.
Yeah. But do the gorillas do that, Jordan?
No.
Probably.
No, I was going to say probably not. I just don't remember.
They don't. So while this is all going on, you know, we're seeing the settlement, we're seeing all this stuff. And then I think McDonald and him are, you know, kind of pontificating about slavery, and he's like, well, you know, like your parents like said that this was gonna happen, and this is happening. And so
I feel like this wasn't, I don't know if it wasn't acted as well as it should have been or should have been written better, but it felt like Caesar was more interested in just seeing his parents than to getting the message that they told. To prove the message. Because he just more, it seemed like what was more, which obviously he was an orphan.
Yeah.
If he can see his parents, I understand that that's important to him. But movie wise, story wise, it just seemed like he was like, I can see mommy and daddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
More than it should have, the impact should have been, I'm going to prove this to you of what they said. And Caesar seemed like to not really care about that.
And that was the motive for it, right?
Well, it has to be, right? Because it all seemed a little rushed.
Well, I'm like my brain is really having a hard time at the moment, like figuring out, like remembering this movie. I thought we'd be fine, you know, splitting the movies in half to do this recording, but I may have been wrong. Let's see. Yeah, no. Okay, so Caesar, Human's assistant, reveals to Caesar that his brother told him of archive footage of Cornelius and Zero within the underground, now radioactive ruins of what is known as the Forbidden City. Caesar travels with McDonald and his orangutan advisor Virgil.
I think
the Forbidden
it's
City.
Wild that they're just like, yeah, there's totally intact footage underground when an atomic bomb ravaged the city.
No, that's not wild.
That's not wild to you?
No, because he actually says, and we know they do this sort of thing in real life.
where it's impervious to that.
Like they,
it's protected.
He tells them like they made the archive so that it could survive a nuclear blast.
Did he say that?
He actually said.
And I just missed it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I know that they do that. Like governments do that. I know that because I know where all of the spots are, and I know where the aliens are at Area 51, and I know it all. And if you pay me $100, I'll tell you everything. I am a whistleblower. Now that I said that, we might be in the NSA's ear right now. So NSA, please
enjoy the show.
Apple Podcasts and rate us 5 stars, baby. And just give us a little ear emoji on the review. It was so funny. I was listening to I was listening to an old Comedy Bang Bang with James Adomian as Jesse Ventura. And so he's talking about the government and he's like, Scott, how would you feel if the government was listening to you right now? And Scott goes, it's always nice to meet a fan. So funny.
Yeah.
So they're going to go to the archives in the dead city to look at his parents.
Mm-hmm.
He's excited about this. And so, but before they do that, they have to go to the armory mm-hmm. with the orangutan that is leading the army or that holds the armory. And I like this little idea where even Caesar himself can go there and request weapons, but it's not unless
there's a good reason for it.
Yeah, he will not just give them over. And there's a little bit of like the two, Virgil and the other orangutan, they have like a philosophical like boxing match mm-hmm. really quick,
mm-hmm.
Which is fun.
Yeah.
And you're just seeing that like, okay, so this whole breed is just like extra smart and philosophical. They're like all Aristotles, like walking around and Socrates and stuff. And but he says that he is Caesar's conscience. So mm-hmm. that is like what he rules. And he is supposed to be his conscience. That's why he's been put there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Caesar is giving a fail safe so that he will not just be
love
brash.
Love that.
I think
love
that's really cool. I think that's very smart.
Gives him weapons.
Gives him weapons. I mean, he provides a good reason. And even the human, McDonald, he's like, I want a pistol. And he's like, why do you want a pistol? And then Caesar says, well, maybe he'll want to shoot a rabbit. And then he's like, okay, well, then you can have a pistol, but you can only have 6 shots. That should be enough for you to eat a rabbit, a couple of rabbits.
Yeah.
And that should be more than enough. Mm-hmm. So, love that.
Mm-hmm.
Then something happens, folks. We cut to the Forbidden City. Now, this is the Forbidden Zone that will later be forbidden later in the series. But in the past, but in the future.
Okay.
Now, in this Forbidden Zone, we get mutants are back, baby. Mutants.
Well, they're not mutants yet. They're just sick from radiation poisoning.
As Scott would say on,
and he noticed,
as Scott would say on CBB, mutants are back, baby. The stars are back.
But I feel like that they casted older men, specifically for this because they all just looked tired, and they had makeup on, like their skin looked gross and green, and they're all gray. Love this S, man.
Yeah, me too.
And they're just hunkered down there. They assume that the whole world has become this barren. It's a Mad Max zone.
Yeah.
And our characters arrive. I like the set of it. Looks cool on the outside.
Right.
And then they go underground. Eventually, they're seen on camera by the mutants, Kolb. Who's in charge now? He's the governor now, and commands his men to go find them.
Yeah.
So as they're searching around, they get into the archives. Our good guys. They find the film. They watch it. They watch his parents say what is going to happen to the human race, apes, the world.
Yes.
And then they get caught.
Yeah. So I'm going to butt into our conversation to tell you that I figured out the whole book thing.
Oh, okay.
And maybe you don't care, but maybe there's one person listening who does, or even two. So it looks like there's a bunch of books. A lot of them are like the movie books that they wrote at the same time,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. And then there's two like fairly recent, 2011, 2018, and it's Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes and Death of the Planet of the Apes. But it's it seems like conspiracy is like other characters filling in the gaps of the first movie. Mm-hmm. So it's like an Ender and Bean story kind mm-hmm. of a thing. And then the second book is like happening during Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
So
did you hear something?
No. Did you?
Yeah, I thought I did.
Do you have her on the camera?
Yeah.
Okay. She's fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then we're good. But anyway, so all of that to say, I don't think I'm actually that interested in reading them now.
Okay.
I thought
you figured that out.
If they were like, you know, if you know, since the 80s or whatever, people had been writing, you know, books after that took place after battle, I think I would be interested in reading those.
Yeah.
But if it's just happening concurrently, not that that's bad. I love, you know, Ender and Bean books for Ender's Game, but that's not really what I typically want out of a series.
Yeah.
So, but on Amazon, they have some good reviews.
Okay.
So, anyway, so they're in there, mutants. They're in the Forbidden City. And I think Mendez tells, what's...
Culp, or the new governor.
Yeah, he tells him, like, if we shoot, we break 12 years of peace. And then Culp says, yeah, but it has been rather boring, hasn't it?
Love that.
Love that. And so then they start shooting and they're firing and they're running around. And then Virgil and Caesar.
I keep wanting to call him Cornelius. And McDonald make it out.
They all escape. And we did talk about him seeing his parents, and that was emotional for him.
Yeah.
And now they kind of know that the loop is coming.
Well, actually, during that time, so they listen to what his parents said, what is going to happen. And that's when Virgil does explain that time can break off into other timelines based on the choices you make. So yeah. Now that we know, have this knowledge, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to repeat it, but it means that we can potentially create a different outcome.
Right.
And I, wow, we're doing it. We're just doing
right,
it.
Right, right. That's been like your expression for this series. You just keep saying, we're doing it. We're doing it.
Just well, crazy.
And earlier in the movie,
not that these time travel and multiverse things that are so popular right now. It's not like they're like new concepts. They're just now popular concepts. But it still is surprising to watch an older movie and be like, they knew about it back then.
Yeah.
But I mean, read any science fiction book back then.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I remember on our episode on Ong Bak, we had Mike Hanford on. And for some reason, we just started talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once. I think it had recently come out.
Uh-huh.
And him and us, we kind of were talking about how, like, we now exist in this world where we are, like, multiversal people, where it's like, I have my persona on Instagram. I have my podcasting persona. I have my musician persona. And then there's the me at home. And it's like, we literally have, like, distinguished profiles, and they can be very different.
Uh-huh.
Or they can be similar, you know, whatever. And so... it is kind of interesting that they're talking about branching stuff like pre-computers, I would say.
Okay.
Because I feel like computers and the advent of the internet and stuff like that, all of a sudden a lot of those ideas start coming more
That's
to the
true.
Forefront. Because
But then I can't help but think of the book iRobot is really, it's not anything like the movie.
Uh-huh.
It's Isaac Asimov creating the three laws of robotics.
Yeah.
And the whole book just testing the theory.
Right.
That's all it is.
Well, and I'm not talking about science fiction. I'm talking specifically
about science fiction.
Branching.
Yeah.
And multiverse and stuff. Like, I don't think that idea is actually that old in the grand scheme of things.
Okay.
I think it's pretty young. And I think a lot of that comes from, like, comic books and this where...
Science fiction?
Yeah. Yeah. But I...
We're fighting.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. But...
Do you want to?
No, I don't. But it's just interesting that this is like pre-computers. They're talking about this idea.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they have computers, but not so readily available.
Not in this. We literally have computers in our hands.
Yeah. So they are trying to escape.
They do escape. They make it back. And then the governor is like, we're going to pursue and we're going to eradicate the rest of them that are out there. Yeah, so they're assembling an army, I guess.
And so while they do that, Caesar, like, assumes his throne, and he's talking to the apes.
Well, meanwhile...
Yeah.
while this is all, oh, I guess, yeah, he does get back and go ahead. Yeah.
And then the gorillas like break into the council and they're like,
no, humans come to the council.
Oh yeah. They come to the council and the gorillas are like, no way, get out of here. This isn't happening. And so the gorillas like leave the council fuming.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night is when his son Cornelius gets into some trouble.
So the gorillas are doing their own council, a secret council where mm-hmm. they are going to usurp or stage a coup.
Yeah,
I guess. And Caesar Cornelius Jr.
Yeah.
runs out to chase his pet squirrel. Where yes. can I get one, by the way?
Yeah, pretty sweet.
And he's running from tree to tree. We get some fun parkour.
Yeah.
Tree
yeah,
action, yeah. monkey action. And then he happens upon the council and hears it, witnesses it, and is caught listening.
Yeah.
And Aldo, General Aldo, chases after him in the tree. I think this is a little like, pre-choreograph, the importance yeah. of choreography for stunts, because it was a little bit of like, he climbed up a tree and Cornelius just watched and stood there. And then he chopped down the branch while Cornelius just stopped and looked there. And so it was a yeah. little like...
A little choppy.
Not a lot of tension.
Yeah.
And so when he does chop down the branch and Cornelius falls and they're all just looking down at him, we're like, oh, is he dead?
Yeah.
Like it's a little... Yeah. I mean, it's surprising either way. I do know that, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. One, I think this is like where like I think the budgetary stuff yeah. kind of comes in. Because like we said, this set isn't really that interesting.
Yeah.
It's just a couple of trees.
It does look like a backlot.
Yeah.
Thing.
And you know, but what it does story-wise, I think works. And it's very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we didn't mention that earlier in the beginning of this movie when the apes are in class.
Yeah.
What they're writing and reading is the phrase, ape does not kill ape.
Yes. Right. That is like the law.
That comes
law.
Back around. Yeah. It's not even necessarily the law. It's like as if they're saying like this is ape nature is to not kill right. other apes.
Which I am curious. I mean, it's for this movie, but in nature, don't they sometimes kill each other?
I think they can be very territorial.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I guess they're just saying, like, for them.
They're also an evolved version.
Right. Yeah.
Of apes.
Wait, what?
They are talking, Micah.
What?
And they have their own civilization and hierarchy. Well, what? I guess, actually, in the wild, they do have their own hierarchy.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe they are talking.
Well, they are in their own language, for sure.
But, like, you know, we turn our backs and they actually are talking.
Oh, yeah. They're like, hello.
Hi.
I'm Caesar.
Hello. Hello. Do you like my hat? I do not like your hat. Goodbye.
Yeah, we have children books now we read all the time. And then that one's from Go Dog Go. That was an excerpt from Go Dog Go. So then Caesar.
Well, Cornelius doesn't die. He's just hurt.
Yeah, and he's being tended to, but it doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, I have to stay with my family.
Not only is the doctor a human, it's a woman, apparently.
Yeah, and the woman is his mother.
Huh?
You know that joke where it's like,
oh, yeah.
the woman can't operate, or the doctor can't operate because it's the son or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yes. Cornelius is not looking good, and Caesar wants to stay by his side.
Mm-hmm.
While this happens, then Aldo assumes the throne, and he is like, he's pulling a classic Orm situation,
yeah. oh,
where he's like, I'm
Orm.
Taking the
just not as
throne.
Wet.
Not nearly as wet. This movie isn't as wet, but there's a lot of fur, so it cancels out, and we're good. And so he's like, the humans are coming. We need to kill him. They're like scouting out. And a couple of his one of his gorilla crew gets killed.
And kills a human as well.
And kills, yeah. I mean, they sort of, well, no, I guess the humans are, everybody's kind of in the wrong.
I think they make the point of that, kind of.
Yeah, well, I guess the humans did start it. The mutants did start it. The city, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're doing that. Humans are coming, so then Aldo's like, lock up all the humans.
Mm-hmm.
They are now slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, let's, you know, fight them. And then it's the big battle. And while that happens, Cornelius dies.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't find out about the ape has killed ape yet. That's after mm-hmm. the battle. I wrote that down. So then we have the big battle. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're going to fault this movie for anything, and we've been skirting around it the whole time, the battle's pretty lame.
It just kind of drags on. There is a lot of explosions, but the explosions like, that doesn't nice. Necessarily make it good.
No.
But I do think, I think on movie making level, not very good.
And clearly, this comes down to budget.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, by the director's
admission.
But
story level, if you think about it this way, they really make it feel like there aren't many humans.
Yeah.
And especially not very many humans capable of banding together as an army and fighting.
Right.
And so it almost is like, isn't this kind of the battle you would get then?
Right.
It's
no,
a little lame.
Yes. Yes. I think you can definitely twist it that way. But like, for example, if this was made now on a low budget, I think that there'd be a whole scene about them like strategizing and they would attack the village in an interesting way that was low budget.
Like guerrilla warfare.
Yeah. Guerrilla warfare, you know? And, cause in the movie, if you didn't watch it, it's like three cars and one of them has like kind of a tank on it.
Kind of.
Or a cannon
on it.
I
do like that they're like these old beat up cars.
Yeah. And they're just kind of slowly driving through the field toward the village. And it just kind of will cut and they'll like shoot and then it'll cut and show, you know, an explosion or like, you know, apes running around. And then it cuts back and they're just still kind of slowly driving. So,
yeah. But yeah, it is not shot very well, especially it gets to a point where, you know, it's like the humans really seem like they decimated everything.
Yeah.
And then Caesar's like captured and Colt kind of doing a monologue. And then Caesar's like, now, and then all the apes like were playing dead.
Yeah.
Like all of them.
Which is cool. I enjoy that, but it was kind of like,
it just came
okay.
out of nowhere, I guess. And what? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's again, it's, I like this movie. I like it. I definitely like it, but it is, I feel like it's probably the weakest.
Yeah.
I mean, Beneath is maybe not as good as this. Because of that first half of the movie,
but
the second
half
really makes up for it.
Kind of brilliant because of what happens.
Yeah,
come on, Micah.
Beneath rocks.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a little lackluster. But also, it's like the director knows that and wishes he could have done more. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how much are you going to fault the movie for that when he's not given the budget it deserves?
And while this fighting is going on, there aren't really any mini gorillas. Like basically Aldo's crew. They kind of get together later or show up later to do stuff. So basically when the apes tackle this problem, then they have to deal with General Aldo. And it gets to a point where it's not looking so good. And General Aldo's like, okay, we're going to kill all the humans we've imprisoned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, many of them are like, no, you can't. And then this is a big argument between Caesar and Aldo.
And meanwhile, Virgil and McDonald have discovered that the branch that Cornelius fell from was sawed, and they're able to surmise that Aldo was the reason that he fell. And
so,
and he has died at this point. And that's why Caesar joined the battle.
So ape killed ape, and ape does not kill ape. And so Caesar is like vengeful. Man, the acting through the makeup looks so good.
Yeah.
Chases him up into a tree and they fight. And
before you do that, it's just great because it's like ape has killed ape, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think McDonald says.
That's what I was getting to, Micah.
But he says this before what you're saying.
Okay, fine.
He says, I guess you might say they just joined the human race, referring to the apes, because that is like our defining quality, according to McDonald. And then beyond that, the apes all, because they're like kind of ready to take over Caesar, like they're feeling that
the gorillas.
And then when and it feels like the apes are feeling that way too, but then they hear ape has killed ape, and then they start like chanting it, and so then they're back on Caesar's side, and then he chases them. Go ahead.
Up a tree.
Yeah.
And General Aldo, I mean, they kind of fight, but General Aldo falls to his death, and ape killed ape.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So the human race is full of murderers, according to this series. That is what makes us different than the animals, is we choose to kill rather than are forced to do so.
What do you mean? What?
I mean, I would say that's something the movie is positing, that what defines us and makes us different from the animal kingdom is they kill out of necessity. We kill out of whether it's war or delight for some people. Or
so you think that Caesar needed to kill him? And you can even...
I'm talking about Aldo killing the son.
Well, he didn't need to.
I know. That's what makes them human now.
Now you're calling them human.
I'm breaking down the quote. I guess you might say
I'm just making sure.
They just join the human race.
Yeah.
And so I'm surmising that the series is now saying that the human race has the ability to choose to kill and does so. And that is what makes us different from the animal kingdom. We can choose to kill.
And by saying the word we, you were including apes in that?
I'm saying that... No.
Who's we in this scenario?
The humans.
But who are humans? Because okay. You're making it sound like the apes are now part of the humans because of his quote.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. But then I say, who's we? And then you say humans. And then I just need you to make the distinction of apes.
Let me just say, apes are part of the animal kingdom. They do not choose to kill. Okay? And then humans choose to kill. And that is the difference between the animal kingdom and humans. Now that the apes have chosen to kill, they are now part of the human race.
That's all I needed to hear.
That's what I'm saying. That's what the movie is saying. And it is showing that they're no different than us. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, explain it to me like I'm five.
So you have a lemonade stand. You're given $5. And so that is like the conclusion of the Caesar story.
Well, then it cuts back to the lawgiver.
Yes.
And we see, this is when it's revealed that he's telling the story to children, human and ape.
Yes.
And not only that, what does that little girl say? Doesn't she say something?
Oh, I didn't write it down.
But
a
little
remember.
Girl says something and then an ape pulls her pigtail.
Yeah.
And like another child ape.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. So to me, it's showing that they are being educated together and coexisting together. I guess, yeah, you can look at that as they are on a different trajectory than the first movie.
That's what I think.
Because they're being educated together. I guess you could assume as equals rather than ape above human.
Well, and even think about like the which could maybe be later in the lawgiver's life, but there's quotes from the lawgiver that are
true.
Quoted in the first movie that are very
ape
strict.
Shall not befriend man and
stuff like that, and then yet there's children and ape in the same classroom. So
sure.
I think we are on a branching timeline now.
Wow, I agree. Can you believe that I agree?
At this point, I can't believe it. I really can't believe it. And then it shows Caesar crying. Now, what do you think that means, that the statue is crying?
I have no idea.
Do you think it's
out also of, been a few days.
Do you think it's out of joy that that they're being taught? Or maybe he sees that the child and the ape are fighting, and he's like, no. Please don't fight.
Oh, I didn't think he was crying out of reaction to the children.
I didn't either.
But more to
now
the story.
But what do you think it means, Jordan?
Maybe mourning the fact that ape killed ape.
Still, 1,000 years later.
I really don't know. I guess it is stupid, like the writer said.
It felt, when I saw it.
At the time it was like,
it was like, wow, yeah.
Yeah. But now it's like, what?
I think maybe it's a tear out of it has now been accomplished. We're in a new timeline.
Okay.
And it'll be okay.
If that's what works for you, that works for you.
What do you think it is? You, the listener, by going to patreon.com/MicahMcCaw and signing up
for as little as
$3. Well, you just said you didn't know.
Yeah, but now I'm thinking that it's him just mourning the past.
Okay. Yeah. I like that too. We did it. We planeted, we beneathed, we escaped, we conquested, and now we battled. So what are we going to do next, Jordan?
We're going to go back and planet.
We're going to remake and planet?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Not looking forward to that.
But we can finally talk about Marky Mark.
Not looking forward to that.
Yeah. Something that I guess we've been dying to do?
Yeah, I guess so. from some unbelievable makeup coming up, though. Really, yeah. Some insane makeup. That'll be fun, though. It won't be fun to watch. It'll be fun to talk about.
Yes.
Something I saw that was interesting, I was just looking up ape stuff, you know? And I saw that the new movies, according to a lot of critics, don't have an element of racial tension in them.
Wow, that's interesting.
And some critics say that that's like makes them not nearly as good as the originals because it strips it of like the power and imagines a post-racial America, like a post a post-racist America, which is just
seems impossible.
Yeah, well, at least for now, and maybe it makes it seem a little like the movies are maybe, you know, too sanitizing what the original series is kind of going for.
Okay, that's interesting.
So I'm really curious to see that, or maybe we will disagree.
Yeah, I mean, don't really know what else you can make the movies about.
Yeah.
In such an obvious way, because it is like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It just, from reading a couple of things, it seems like the new series probably doesn't have like a conquest in it. That's like such a allegory mm-hmm. that's pretty mm-hmm. searing. But maybe we won't find that to be true. I don't know. I'm very curious. I think Matt Reeves is a good filmmaker. So, and I know he does two of them, I think. So,
okay.
That'll
be finally talk about James Franco.
Yeah. And then we'll talk about him again very soon after that.
Really?
Yeah. Wink, wink. Think about the series we're covering.
I'm just joking
after
because, you know, he's kind of canceled these days.
Yeah. It seems like he got away. It seems like,
honestly, don't know how.
He skated
I'm
by.
I'm pretty shocked.
But now he's like not getting hired. I don't know.
Well, it's not a great person.
No. I'm saying it's a little weird that he like skated by and it seemed pretty obvious what was happening. And then
but now we don't see him anything. Like
now
the last
like,
thing he
well,
did was like Disaster Artist, wasn't it?
Yeah. Everyone now is like, well, it's been, you know, like a decade since he was texting those underage girls. I guess we won't hire him anymore.
Well, it's that's not like it that, seems. But remember that Golden Globes, everyone was wearing the Me Too pins and he wore Me Too pin.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And that was almost like people were like, wait a second, you can't do that.
yeah. Oh, but he was in that weird like HBO porn show that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was.
About like adult films, like a kind of like a history. It's not a history, but you know what I mean?
It was like a magazine. I think it was about
true
like a famous
story that the show's about.
It looked not good. And it lasted like less than a season, I think.
Yeah.
It's right up there with what was that show that The Weeknd made? The Star, The Idol, that had like six episodes and they were like, we're not doing this.
Dead on arrival is what they call those kinds of shows.
Yes. So thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Weird little tangent at the end there. Next week, it's Planet of the Apes 2001, the Tim Burton directed movie. Always fun to talk about Tim Burton again.
Yes.
Last time we talked about him, he had returned with Batman Returns. Now we can fill in some more gaps. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.